broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
Back with you live, ladies and gentlemen, Sam Bushman, Dr. Scott Bradley, a two-hour hard-hitting bonanza on your radio, this freedom-loving, fantastic, faith-filled, we're taking America back, one heart, one mind, one issue at a time. Friday, this is hour two of two, and the goal always to protect life, liberty, and property. It is October 21st in the year of our Lord, 2022. Now, Dr. Bradley tipped off an important topic that I want to drill into, ladies and gentlemen. You've got to understand all this, and this is kind of the problem. With what's going on here, all right? Here's the question for you, ladies and gentlemen. When can a president declare a national emergency? All right, now, there's a lot of discussion surrounding this, and let me tell you why. There is a National Emergencies Act on the books, signed into law by President Gerald Ford on September 14, 1976. The National Emergencies Act, if you will, NEA, is what it is, okay? And the problem with all this is authority, all right? Let's just talk about this very appropriately, very carefully, because you got to understand, the issue is one of authority. When do you have authority for something? When do you have right to delegate that authority? All this is going to be the discussion point with Dr. Bradley. The problem with this, in my opinion, a National Emergency Act, NEA, National Emergencies Act, right? It doesn't matter if it was signed into law, ladies and gentlemen. Congress has authority to do something, maybe, but that doesn't mean they have the authority to give that duty, that responsibility to somebody else, okay? It reminds me of if I have a rental house, and I'm maintaining it and renting it, and it's making a bunch of money, then I got to go out overseas for some reason, so I'm out of the country. So I go to Dr. Scott Bradley and say, Doctor, I need you to go ahead and run this, you know, property for me. I'll give you a percentage of the profits and everything, and you do this for me. I'd love it. That'd be great. And then when I come back, I say, hey, how'd the house go? And you go, it was fantastic. I sold it, made a couple of million. I'm living high on the hog. This is phenomenal. And I'm like, wait a minute. You had authority to run the property. You didn't have authority to sell the property. Well, you delegated all authority to me, Sam, to do whatever I... No, hold on a minute. And so that's kind of the summary, an analogy of what's kind of going on here as we start this discussion. Let's go back to Lincoln. Let's go back to government continuing to seek for power. This is why they need to be impeached, because they go out of their authority with no authority, no jurisdiction, no delegation from anyone. They take power unto themselves, and we let it stand. The founding fathers saw it different. Abraham Lincoln changed the game, and it's been downhill ever since, Doctor.
Well, let's start with Lincoln and habeas corpus. We mentioned that just before the break. Habeas corpus basically is that we can put you in jail, and but you've got to have a hearing. There's got to be due process. You can't just put them in and throw away the key like they did with the January 6th mess that's happening. That's another story, I think. But that habeas corpus is found in Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution, that statement about that. It's also in 10, also about the states. But the fact is that it's a legislative authority. It was not meant to be a long-term lock them up, throw away the key forever. It was just, let's say we have civil unrest, they got to sweep up the streets, and there's people out there throwing rocks, and there happens to be some people that or on the streets too, they get swept up and they get put in the tank, and then they have a quick hearing and say, "Oh, phew, yeah, you're sorry, ma'am, you and your baby that were out on the stroller walk got swept up, and this shouldn't be there." They sort it out, and it's not something that stays in effect, a suspension of habeas corpus, for a long term, but it's just in that immediate exigency of things. But in 1863, Lincoln, the executive, and his generals suspended habeas corpus. And the generals, they were locking people up, throwing away the key. And this happened. It's disgusting what Lincoln did. Absolutely disgusting. In fact, there are many that would rank him as the worst president, as opposed to the best that many others rank him as, in regards to his constitutional violations that we still suffer under. So anyway, the Supreme Court said, no, you can't do that, Lincoln. You just can't do it. And so what did the Congress do? Oh, well, we'll just delegate it to him. And that's exactly what happened unconstitutionally. And we can go to, you know, experts or mentors or whatever you want to call them, like Locke or like Jefferson or like St. George Tucker. And they absolutely unequivocally say, no, if the people delegated an authority constitutionally, the consent of the governed, you know, that's how that works, and ratified that, the governed say, okay, we delegate to you this authority. You cannot redelegate it. So we cannot redelegate anything, whether it's the power to make laws or to break laws or whatever. And so that is held by Congress for habeas corpus, for example. Let's look at another thing that Congress has. Congress shall have power to declare war, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 11. That cannot be delegated. And back during Jefferson's administration, there was a, they call it the Chesapeake Affair. It was basically an act of war that was perpetrated by a British warship. And, everybody was up in arms about it. There was a lot of problem with that. We weren't ready for another war with England yet. And we would have got our clocks cleaned had we gone to that, particularly on the seas. But our land forces were really in pretty poor shape, too. But at any rate, everybody was beating the war drums, wanted to have Jefferson take us off to war. And Jefferson said, no, it's not my job. I'll gather. First of all, he took defensive action. He made sure that we were prepared to repel if a further attack came. And so it didn't, insult was not added to injury, okay? But he did not aggressively say, we're going to go off to war. Now, this was an act of war, really, against the United States. This was not something that happened in Syria or Afghanistan or something like that for all of the nonsense that they do now. The only reason we have people saying, oh, yeah, we got to protect the troops is because we put them there. The idiots in charge put them there. The troops are not to blame. The idiots in charge are. But at any rate, going back to Jefferson, the act of war was done against the United States. But Jefferson said, I'll take defensive and preventative actions. I will prepare. I will gather information. I will turn it over to Congress. Congress shall have power to declare war. Congress got in there, looked at it, and cooler heads prevailed. We didn't go to war at that time. So that's the way things happen. And all through history, we have had challenges come to us. And there have been, as I said earlier, whether it was malaria or smallpox or yellow fever or dengue fever, we've had diseases that have come. I mean, Philadelphia was a really crappy place to be in the summer many times because of some of the things that happened there. I mean, you get over on the Mississippi River and all of these things were rampant. People, they left town for the summer until the mosquitoes went away. But we didn't call a national emergency where we shut down religious liberty and we shut down freedom of speech and we shut down the freedom of assembly. We violated every single turn. And someday, somebody may say, as I mentioned before the break or before the top of the hour, by golly, we've had a lot of mass shootings this year. Why don't we suspend the Second Amendment for a while so while we get our arms around this thing? People, if they can do it for one thing, they can do it for another. It is just absolutely absurd, and there is no authority nationally for that to happen. But we've stopped. Oh, okay, let's go back to Gerald Ford for a while. Holy cow, don't get me started. Gerald Ford is a poor excuse for a president. He's a lesser. After World War II, he came back and run for office as a socialist. Oh, excuse me, they called him progressives. They do again now. But he found out he couldn't win, so he became a Republican. And when it came time for picking a new vice president for a disgraced president, they picked him. It was almost unanimous where the House and the Senate said, yeah, we'll put this guy in. Why? Because he was a socialist. And you say, oh, he signed this law in 1976. It's unconstitutionally delegated, this Emergency War Powers Act. The nonsense that went on after 9/11, where these armed responses were authorized against terrorists. None of that is authorized in the Constitution. And we're fighting in Somalia or West Africa or wherever now because they're saying, oh, yeah, this goes with the authority that was delegated to George W. Bush back in 2001 because of the 9/11 stuff. No, the Gulf of Tonkin resolution that happened that dragged us into Vietnam. The Southeast Asia Treaty Organization that we came there under justification. 58,000 Americans died and hundreds of thousands were maimed. All of this stuff is just unconstitutional. And NATO, stuff in Afghanistan, stuff that we're doing in Ukraine, stuff we're doing in Yemen. People, it's just run amok. There is no end.
It is absolutely run amok, ladies and gentlemen. Let's be clear. Can the right of habeas corpus be suspended is the question. Suspension clause of the U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 9, Clause 2, states, the privileges of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless, when in cases of rebellion or invasion, the public safety may require it. Now, the problem with that wording, ladies and gentlemen, is you've got to understand the Constitution. You got to understand it from an original intent. And you've got to study the Founding Fathers' actions there, too, to understand what they meant and how they meant it. It can be violated, and it has many times, and it continues to be. We've got to stand up to the original intent of the founders on this topic. We'll do so in seconds on your radio.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpicTimes.com. Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to LocalHoneyMan.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at LocalHoneyMan.com.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Scott Bradley with me. So we talked about the writ of habeas corpus, but here's the problem, folks. We're playing games with words. That's how this gets started. So the question started out, when can the president declare a national emergency? Well, there's no authority to declare any emergency per se, right? The National Emergencies Act, NEA, was signed into law in 1976, but again, national emergency, there's no authority for Congress, or that term isn't even in the Constitution, as far as I can tell. Now, the writ of habeas corpus, on the other hand, ladies and gentlemen, had a very, very limited way that it could be suspended. If you look in, Article 1, Section 9, Clause 2, the privileges of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended. Okay? That's the general rule. And then they have an exception here, unless when, in cases of rebellion or invasion, the public safety may require it. So rebellion, that's debatable what that means. The rebellion would have to threaten the safety of us all, though. Okay, you can't just take a little teeny rebellion, say, in Washington, D.C., even if you claim January 6th is that, and apply that to Utah or the several states. See, there's jurisdictional boundaries. There's sovereignty questions. Okay, but the point that I'm getting at is you got to understand the rule, which is, hey, shall not be suspended. Then you got to understand the exception. We've never had this kind of an invasion or the safety requiring it in America ever in its history. Because what does a rebellion mean? A tiny rebellion that can be stopped. The founding fathers' understanding was you only match the level of the need or the necessity, right, of the safety may require it. In other words, the necessity of the safety. What level would we have to go to? There's never been a level like this ever. But the problem is Congress, without authority, ladies and gentlemen, has delegated at least 136 distinct statutory, quote, emergency powers to the president, each available upon the declaration of a, quote, an emergency. Only 13 of these require a declaration from Congress. The remaining 123, the president can just do whatever he wants without any input from Congress. See, they've gone rogue. They've gone criminal, ladies and gentlemen. There's no way to understand it any different if you believe in the Constitution as an absolute document, and if you believe in the understanding of the founding fathers going into this, and you really study the rise of the threat or the relation of the threat to reality. This has never been justified, Doctor.
Well, let's go to the 47th Federalist Paper just for the fun of it. And basically, this is what is happening with these delegations, quote unquote, all of them unconstitutional, not a one of them authorized. All of them violate constitutional protocol. But what we are doing is we're creating a monarchy. They say, oh, he's elected. No, no, no. Listen to this carefully. Federalist 47, Madison wrote, the accumulation of all powers, legislative, executive, and judiciary, in the same hands, whether of one, a few, or many, and whether hereditary, self-appointed, or elective, may justly be pronounced the very definition of tyranny. So what we're doing is placing in the hands of one individual. Again, the Constitution is a document that's entire substance is based upon power. And basically, it's human nature. The Founding Fathers created this document to counteract what they and we should understand as human nature, and that is to accumulate and then begin to abuse power. That so much has to be given for a general government to operate. You know, these things, Federalist 45 talks about the external things they have to deal with, you know, war and negotiation and commerce and so on internationally. But the fact of the matter is that that was all that was delegated, really, with a few rare exceptions for crimes inside the country, like counterfeiting, for example. And the rest of it was totally withheld. 10th Amendment tells us that. And so they set up power opposing power. And that was to prevent the accumulation and then abuse of power. And as they delegate this stuff, again, without any authority to do so, that grants this accumulation of powers in the same hands. Now let's go to Federalist 51, just briefly. Here's, again, Madison brilliantly stated, but the great security against a gradual concentration of the several powers in the same department consists in giving to those who administer each department the necessary constitutional means and personal motives to resist encroachment of the others. The provision for defense must in this, as in all other cases, be commensurate with the danger of attack. Ambition must be made to counter ambition. The interest of the man must be connected with the constitutional rights of the place. So what the heck does that mean? What it means is the legislature's got to say over our dead body, we will not in any way relinquish unto you, the President of the United States or the courts or anybody else, authority to do what's been delegated to us. And we will hold you accountable. In fact, the House has the responsibility of bringing impeachment charges if a president oversteps it, or let's say a judge or something like that. If they overstep it, bring the impeachment charges. Do it. It's a scarecrow. We never do it anymore. Well, except for stupid, foolish reasons that nobody can, you know, you look at the justification of the last couple of times, it's been like, huh? And even back in the Bill Clinton days, huh? We got the Lewinsky factor in there, and that's what they were very interested in. Some dalliance of a president with an intern, for crying out loud. When the greater problems, we mentioned in the last hour some of the things that Bill Clinton did, like a transfer of military technology to the Chinese. Holy cow! And nobody said, never a whimper. But so the Congress has a responsibility. The Senate has a responsibility. The pushback, you just don't. And I've
the House controlling the purse strings has a responsibility.
No question. But I have talked with sitting senators. Oh, we have a very wonderful collegiality with our fellow senators. No, you don't. You got to stir the pot, make some waves. I mean, the fact of the matter is the Savior came on the earth. And there are dividing lines. You know, the sword that divides asunder this, we've talked about his cherubic disposition that a lot of people try and put him in, and his effeminate bowing and scraping to everybody. No, he was a real man. He was a real man. He is a real man. He will return as a real man someday. And that's kind of what I'm hoping for in the near term. But the point
of the
matter
is, he is the Prince of Peace, in that when people obey the commandments he has given, there is peace and stability and safety and prosperity and liberty. But when people Absolutely. Don't obey his commandments, they create their own opposition. They create their own war. Because anything that violates the Prince of Peace, the commandments, the principles of liberty, smacks of tyranny by its very nature, ladies and gentlemen. And that's the reality that we face. And I'm not afraid to say it. So, yes, we're stirring the pot on this thing. And I don't debate Dr. Scott Bradley about this. I'm trying to highlight this. The National Emergencies Act. Can the president declare a national emergency? Well, it depends on how you define all that. We're playing games with words. These acts that are supposedly modifying or adjusting or supersede the Constitution, that's absolute pure baloney. Okay? You don't just supplant the supreme law of the land because Congress passed an act they had no authority to pass. They should all be impeached. Back in the day, they should have been. And nowadays, the longer we hold on to this, we should impeach them. They need to stand up and stop and say there are no emergencies whatsoever, and there's no Emergencies Act. It's repealed. And we don't have authority to grant any of this to the president at all. And habeas corpus may be suspended, but it's very limited in scope. And if you understand the founding of the fathers, there's never been a case in United States history since the founding of America, the signing of the U.S. Constitution, that would justify it. Not a single one. You say, Sam, wait a minute. Hold on. What about the Civil War, Sam? Wouldn't that... I don't think so. I don't think we had to go there. What, to get rid of slavery? What, to violate states' rights? There was just as many abuses constitutionally from the North as the South by far. So, ladies and gentlemen, we back into these real discussions. How many people have the guts to have these real on-the-ground discussions? I say there has not been a single justification for the violation of habeas corpus since this country was founded, Doctor.
Well, I would have to use your same logic on that, and what we use now is the drop of a hat logic. There is no logic. It's a knee jerk. You know, remember I brought this up. You know, the 9/11 2001 thing and this authorization for use of military force act. It's still being chased. They're doing this all over. They never let go of it. And by the way, when Congress quote unquote delegated their authority to suspend habeas corpus back in 1863, it has continued to be claimed by the president. We're talking 150 plus years later. And that's how things go when we get out of
whack. Ladies and gentlemen, it is treasonous and criminal and smacks of tyranny. Dr. Bradley and Sam Bushman continue in seconds on your radio.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
You-
USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
John Kirby, the National Security Council's coordinator for strategic communications, has announced Iranian personnel have been working in Crimea to train Russian pilots how to use Iranian-made drones. The United States made the statement Thursday as Moscow attempts to maintain its hold on illegally gained territory in southern Ukraine. John Kirby on CBS News.
We have had great support from both sides of the aisle in Congress over the course of the last eight months. Terrific support. I think everybody realizes what's at stake here, which is more than just, the town of Kherson or Kharkiv or Slovyansk. It's really about this idea of sovereignty, and it's really about what the security environment in Europe is going to look like going forward. It has changed today.
United Kingdom's Prime Minister Liz Truss has resigned after 45 days in office, marked by turmoil triggering the second Tory leadership election in 4 months. Boris Johnson is among those said to be considering bids. Sir Graham Brady, the chairman of the 1922 committee, said a new leader could be chosen by next Friday. As the Democrats are relying on abortion issues to get through the midterm elections and the report card for Democrats running the country for the last 2 years, Georgia gubernatorial candidate Democrat Stacey Abrams says abortions could solve inflation. Here's her analogy this week.
But let's be clear. Having children is why you're worried about your price for gas. It's why you're concerned about how much food costs.
Pakistan's election commission on Friday disqualified former Prime Minister Imran Khan from holding public office for 5 years. They're accusing him of unlawfully selling state gifts and concealing assets. And on a sad note, Dave Herman, who helped protect Joe Namath in the Jets' historic Super Bowl III win, died Wednesday at the age of 81. USA Radio News.
If you owe the IRS $10,000 or more in taxes, please listen to this important message. The IRS is aggressively hiring and quickly ramping up their tax collection team. Act now and protect yourself with a call to Tax Alliance. Don't let the money you owe the IRS keep you up at night and ruin your life. You may be surprised at how much having Tax Alliance on your side can protect you from the IRS collections and help you save thousands on what you owe. Here's what a customer had to say.
Tax Alliance did an amazing job helping me through a quite difficult situation, saving me tens and thousands of dollars that I would have been paying for many years to come.
Tax Alliance is rated A+ with a Better Business Bureau with no consumer complaints. If you owe the IRS at least $10,000 or more in back taxes, have unfiled returns, or have a payment plan and are still frustrated, call Tax Alliance now for a free consultation. 800-987-1097. 800-987-1097. That's 800-987-1097.
Tax Alliance, your tax resolution solution.
Live and on your radio, ladies and gentlemen, let me understand a little bit about the intent of the Founding Fathers. They were designing to separate and divide power. Their goal was to chain down mischievous thugs, men, women, whatever you want to say, with the Constitution. The checks and balances are vertical and horizontal. And any time somebody took authority unto themselves, they were not properly delegated via the jurisdictional boundaries, the separation of powers, the checks and balances, whatever term you want to use here. Okay, they were supposed to be absolutely smacked down into compliance. Hey, there's no authority there. You need to stop it. You need to stop it now. But we've absolutely had dereliction of duty for so long that people believe that it's acceptable nowadays. The bottom line is people should be impeached. People should go to prison. People should be on charges for treason. Okay, this is unacceptable, and you got to understand the founders' intent. Their intent was to make sure that nobody acted outside of authority. Nobody took power into themselves that they weren't properly delegated by we the people. Remember, they derived their just powers from the consent of the governed. The checks and balances were critical. The document, the contract with America, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution, it had sections and said, hey, here's what you can do, and the rest is off the table. Here's what you can do, other branch, and the rest is off the table, and so on. Okay, the problem is we have now just allowed this to blur and merge, and it's almost even impossible because they've morphed words and played games of terms to where you can't even intelligently discuss this in the tradition of the Founding Fathers without absolutely ripping off the Band-Aid and saying, look, what the heck is a national emergency? Well, there is no such thing, folks. That's just a made-up word for thugs to grab power. Okay, that's the problem here. There's never been a national emergency in the United States ever. Because what does that mean? Even when you're at war, how is it an emergency? All you got to do is stop fighting and the emergency's over, right? All you got to do is stop invading territory and the emergency's over, right? Okay, the problem is we're playing games with words and we don't understand the intent of our founding fathers. We don't understand the checks and balances and we don't insist on them. And if we don't insist on them, we lose them, Doctor.
Well, you summarized quite nicely the facts in the matter. What we've done actually with all of these delegations and these redefinitions and these resolutions and, you know, all of this nonsense that's going on is, in every instance, they've been taken as blank checks. Okay? This Emergency Act, 1976, that's a blank check to do whatever I want to do.
What, hold on. It's a criminally derived blank check, though, Doctor.
It is.
Let's be
it
clear.
Is. They don't have the power and authority to write a check for that. And, you talk about the whether it's endless war with that authorization for military use that happened in 2001, or this idea that they can do it, suspend habeas corpus for sickness or your religion or anything else like that. These are not authorized at all. You use a resolution that, you made a mention of the beginning of this hour in regards to, you leave town, leave me in charge of your rental, and I sell it. But there's all sorts of other egregious things that happened. Well, the Constitution's still there. They say, we didn't sell it. Well, another little analogy that I use oftentimes is if we had a housekeeper here. We don't. I mean, we keep our own house. But if we had a housekeeper to do the laundry and cook the meals and keep the house clean, and she made a pass at me, what do you think my wife would say? She'd say, no, she's beyond her scope of her responsibility, right? She'd fire her. She'd fire that person. And whether it was
and
a groundskeeper.
And justly so.
Absolutely. If it was a groundskeeper that mowed my lawn and trimmed my flowers and kept the weeds down, whatever, and he ends up selling the house, as your analogy from earlier in the hour. He's way beyond his assignment. The assignment that we have given to those that sit in office were clearly defined in the United States Constitution. End of discussion. 10th Amendment. We didn't give you the power. You don't have it. The creature that was formed by the process of the Constitution is the general government. You know, the executive, the legislative, and the judicial branches and all associated accoutrements that are with them. They were created by the Constitution. They are creatures of the Constitution. They cannot take on additional anything, life, responsibilities, power, anything, unless it was delegated. The creators of the Constitution, the states and the people, are the ones that have got to keep them reined in. And it's like Jefferson said, let no more be said of confidence in man, but bind him down from mischief with the change of the Constitution. We do not delegate authority by an election in the sense that we're saying, okay, you can write any check you want. We're saying we're selecting you to represent us within the limits and bounds of the Constitution. And you cannot go beyond that. And that's what these people need to be brought to understand again. We need to help, well, first of all, we the people. We're the reason there's a mess. It's because we've stopped taking responsibility for our own governance. And we have allowed buffoons and baboons and idiots. I mean, I don't know how to clarify and classify them all. There, again, I always say there's a few rare exceptions, but they're getting more and more rare, apparently. And we just, we're having an election
right now. And that's why we're having this discussion, Doctor, to teach a principle here. You cannot use specific cases to understand the principle. What you do is you take principles and apply it to specific situations, not the other way around. Because if you understand the principle, you can apply it everywhere. If you just take a certain case and you put it in a vacuum, so to speak, then you're not applying the principle. You might have a reason that you don't like it or something, but you're not properly applying the principle. That's why it's so important to strictly interpret the Constitution in its original sense. That's why it's so important to understand the Founding Fathers and their views on the matter and why and what the debates were about and who was saying what for what reasons and what the concerns were. And this is how you embody the principle and then apply it to any situation going forward. That is what needs to happen, or you're always going to be debating this, never with any facts, never with any stability. It's always going to be a relative moving discussion. Okay, you can't have that or you'll eventually lose the debate because everything is relative. Pretty soon, it's like, well, I don't believe in God. Well, you do. I do. Well, there's no God. Prove it. Now, see, you're just off psychotic. And that's, if we're not very careful, what tends to happen with these discussions. We change a word and then say, well, hey, now it's emergency. An emergency, that's a different word. We're not violating habeas corpus. We're just talking about an emergency here, right? Okay, we're lying to ourselves because now we've gone far afield from the intent and the principle. Doctor?
Well, there's an old adage, the hard cases make bad law. And everybody tries to shoehorn or, you know, pound you through a knothole on a specific hard case. And if you don't understand the principles, those hard cases become a conundrum of the Gordian knot that cannot be untied. And so we need to understand the baseline, and then we can go forward. And you're right about some of these hard cases that they're trying to shoehorn us into to make it more difficult. Here's what Washington said in his farewell address. If, in the opinion of the people, the distribution or modification of the constitutional powers be in any particular wrong. Now, emphasize wrong. Nobody can say, oh, we got to change the Constitution because it's wrong. No. What they're doing is violating it. And that does not make it wrong. It makes us wrong. Okay, so let me go on. Be in any particular wrong, let it be corrected by an amendment in the way which the Constitution designates. But let there be no change by usurpation. That's what we're doing right now. For though this in one instance may be the instrument of good, yeah, we found a hard case where we think we ought to, you know, maybe do it differently, it is the customary weapon by which free governments are destroyed. So what we're doing now with all of these exceptions and these redefinitions and to hold our mouth just this way or that way or whatever, we're destroying our free government. And this has been going on literally generationally. I mean, you look, I mean, Woodrow Wilson, it was before that. How about that? Oh, it was Lincoln. Oh, yeah, how about that? How about, you know, and you can go back. There were instances of efforts to change it. I think of something that happened February 7th in 1792 in the House, where they tried to redefine the welfare clause of the Constitution. I mean, they were talking almost moments after the Constitution was put into effect. There has been a constant drag on this. The Illuminati, I mean, I don't know exactly when the Illuminati got in the United States, but I know it was at least from 1784, which was, you know, 3 years before we even had our Constitution Convention. There has been an effort to destroy the freedom of the people. Oh, wait a minute. Let's go back even farther. Satanic. The satanic effort that predates mortality, even. There's always been an undertow, but we've got to stand on principle.
Got to stand with God, family, and country, ladies and gentlemen. There's a California law that got put in place to highlight the exact point we're making. We'll tell you about it in seconds with Dr. Bradley on your radio.
Why does the left lie constantly? Because they get spiritual power from lying. The lies come from Satan, the father of lies. John 8:44. Here's how the political lying process works. Satan provides the beast with a lie. Then the more they use the lie, the more spiritual power they get. Look, the media is a lie multiplier, and this multiplication gives more evil, spiritual power to the beast, and that can overwhelm and even deceive the body of Christ, especially when the body is being disobedient to the head. The churches today are incorporated, so they're subordinate to human government. They obey the beast and do nothing to restore our national relationship with God. And the government shall be on his shoulders, Isaiah 9:6. That verse is not for the present-day church. Rather, it is for the end-time church, the body of the line of Judah. A message from Christ Kingdom Ministries.
Mm-hmm. The CDC just reported that 7,218 people died after receiving a COVID-19 shot. Granted, vaccines are a complicated concoction of chemicals, and as with any medical experiment, it can take a long time to get it right. This is not the first time people have been hurt when vaccinated. What is different this time, and so concerning, is the reaction to these death numbers. Let me explain. In 1976, the government vaccinated 45 million people for swine flu. A total of 53 people died after getting that shot, and the U.S. government immediately halted the vaccination program. Why? Because authorities decided it was too much of a risk. Why would they halt the program back then for 53 deaths, but now, with over 7,000 deaths, they are using every method possible to force it on you? In fact, now the health authorities are using their power to silence anyone who dares to question the COVID vaccination. Why? Why is anyone that questions COVID silenced? Even doctors are being censored. What's up with that?
Paid for by Ammon Bundy for governor. VoteBundy.com.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, who's got the guts for hard-hitting talk like Dr. Bradley and Sam Bushman? Nobody, I tell you, in the nation, nobody. But we get it done to the best of our ability to tell the tale of liberty in the traditions of our founding fathers, ladies and gentlemen. James Madison on tyranny. Look, you cannot put all these authorities in a single hand or it's tyranny. All right, California Governor Gavin Newsom. He criminally signs a bill making it easier to, quote, punish California doctors who spread COVID disinformation. Top epidemiologist warns that it's a chilling interference into the practice of medicine. Now, I go way further than this head epidemiologist. It's beyond just chilling. Okay, it's criminal. I don't care if the House created a bill and the Senate passed the bill and the state governor signed the bill, the president of the state, so to speak. Okay, they're all criminal. They don't have authority to make a bill that determines if I'm a doctor, first of all, licensing me and restricting my ability. That's one discussion. But another discussion beyond that is, hey, who's going to define misinformation then? That same governor, that same, quote, state Congress of California that determined that if you go against their, quote, will, what it means is no doctor can cite against a politician. The politician knows more regardless of the doctor's credentials, regardless of the facts in the case. And, hey, who decides misinformation versus factual information or truth? The government thinks they can. This is criminal, and this violates exactly what we're talking about, Dr. Bradley.
I mean, this is a prior constraint. This violates the First Amendment. I mean, I look at, for example, our state of Utah Constitution, or Article 1 in the state of Utah is basically a restatement of the Bill of Rights. And by the way, the religious liberties stuff and the freedom of speech and the press and habeas corpus and everything else is protected in that. But as I look further down, I mean, there's a statement in the Utah Constitution. It's in Article 6, Section 30. You got to get it out. Well, I mean, you know, most people probably will never look at the state of Utah Constitution, including the governor and the senators and the congressmen there. But it's their Article 6, Section 30, is a continuity of government during emergency clause. They thought about this when they were writing it. And it says specifically, under subsection 2 of it, it does not permit officers to act or these temporary measures to be contrary to the Constitution and applicable law. See, that is a clear statement. And an applicable law cannot be contrary to the Constitution because it's paramount and superior to the Constitution is paramount to any legislative enactment. And so this is a clear statement of the effect of the limits and bounds of constitutional government. And it doesn't matter if you've got an emergency, this thing in Article 6 of the Utah Constitution, where, oh my goodness, we've got an emergency. But you can't violate the Constitution. You just can't. And news, oh my heavens, that guy's a fruitcake in every way, shape, and form. And that's the nicest thing you can say about him. But the fact of the matter is he may run for president. Can you imagine? And that's how far we have strayed, where we the people have come to understand our government so poorly that fruitcakes run it, or dementia cases, or I don't know what you'd call Kamala or Pelosi. I mean, I think they're, maybe they can't blame it on dementia. Maybe it's just incapacity mentally. I don't know what it is. But the fact of the matter is, we the people have the responsibility to elect and hold their feet in the fire every single person. You know, whether it's the housekeeper we have in our home that's trying to break up a marriage, they got to be fired. They've got to be, or the groundskeeper that tries to sell the estate because they for some reason think that the assignment gives them the responsibility to do whatever they want. No. The limits and bounds of every person in government are clearly stated. And you can't overstep those bounds and be honorable in your oath of office.
The fact is, right now, the American people in the great state of California should jealously guard their liberties and absolutely remove everyone who voted for this from office, for literally acting outside of their scope of authority and acting in a criminal manner. They don't have authority to do this. They did it. Newsom should be gone. All those who voted for it in the House and the Senate should be gone. And this should be an absolute great check on power, where the people say, look, we never delegated authority for you to do this kind of stuff. You don't have authority. It's not going to happen again. And you could say, well, Sam, that's sure a harsh response. No, I'd even go further and say you ought to try to criminally prosecute these people as well. But the point that I'm getting at is, if Americans were to stand up on a few of these cases and double down, we wouldn't be debating this all the time, because politicians would know, you know what, you do that and you're gone. You represent me wrongly in that, where you don't have authority and stuff like that. When I elected you, I didn't give you authority, and your oath of office prohibits your authority, and so on and so on and so on. Hey, if I violate any financial issues, like if I'm a mortgage broker and I take someone out to lunch and say, hey, can you give me loans? You know what? Then they say that's a conflict of interest. I can't even take you out to lunch and ask for you to give me loans. Or it's pay to play is what they call it. But yet these guys can literally do this, and we're not going to have harsh penalties. Folks, we have got to get engaged here. And if we don't, we're going to absolutely lose our country over these very issues, Dr. Bradley.
You know, we could debate, no, maybe not debate, but we could certainly expose the fallacious reasoning behind licensure laws and how they too are constraint in the free market. But, you know, you talk about, these doctors, they can't give any contrary information in regard to COVID. Well, for more than 31 months, I've been again giving contrary information to what the establishment view is. And you know what? It's being borne out in every single stroke. I mean, while we've been on the air, I've been getting text messages, holy cow, about things that are verifying the fallacious reasoning that's going into what the establishment has said about the safe and effective vaccines and about the application of those and about the danger of those. I mean, my phone is being pounded here. I'm glad I've got it on silent. Of people that are texting me things that are happening today, and you say, well, these medical doctors have got to be prevented. You know, Newsom and his little cronies in the California legislature are saying, you guys got to keep your mouth shut. You know, you got to toe the line. You've got to go with the establishment. The establishment is playing to the profiteering of the pharma companies. And Sam, we've been saying this for more than 31 months. And it's a First Amendment thing. And opinion or not, what's happening now is, I think, demonstrably evidence that what we've been saying for more than 31 months is the truth. And how many people, how many have to die? How many have to suffer for any period of time, and maybe for life? Well, I mean, some of the lucky ones are maybe dead ones. When I see some of the things,
yeah,
that
you
are
and
happening.
I are suffering for life as it currently stands, over a lot of this stuff, ladies and gentlemen. All right, there you have it. We wanted to double down on that because I think it's a critical discussion to have. Elon Musk is planning to let go of almost 75% of Twitter's 7,500 employees. He says the company's overstaffed. He wants to bring it down to about 2,000 employees to increase profitability. I just find this thing comical. Dr. Karma. Bradley. It's karma. It's comical. Yeah. It's what the heck is going on? And now everybody's writing going, oh, my gosh, you can't do that. This would be horrible. And now they want to try to criminally go after his business dealings, saying the government will work on preventing him from being able to do this. I mean, it's insane.
Well, in a way, it's kind of like California. I mean, I have had discussions with, I mean, there's people politically involved in California I have interacted with sometimes. And some Californians are trying to make it criminal or some kind of fine involved if you remove your company from California. It's like, what? Wait a minute.
I can't.
It's like, no. You must stay here and contribute to the profitability and prosperity of California. And it's no, you guys have made it readily apparent that not only am I not welcome here, but you guys are idiots that are running this place. And I'm going to vote with my feet and I'm going to go somewhere else. I'm going to take my business and my jobs to Idaho or wherever, you know. And there's people that say, no, you can't do that. You must. I mean, and it's like they're in control of every aspect of our life. The air we breathe. I mean, and yeah, they try to do that too. I mean, through all of their environmental.
Yeah, it's illegal to burn coal now, right?
Well, it shouldn't be. I mean, but
of course,
but here's the deal. Have you heard of ESG, environmental,
yes. Environmental
social governance?
That's
how they invest. That's how, you know, like BlackRock invests based on your ESG. And if you're into sustainable energy and you're into
the
transgender things and you're into governance with social democracy or whatever, we'll invest in you. And you know what? There's some states. I mean, BlackRock is probably, they were $10 trillion strong here probably a year ago. They lost $1.5 trillion at the beginning of the year. But at any rate, a lot of states have a carbon footprint in terms of their, they produce coal, they produce oil or something like that. They're saying, no, we're not going to invest our state funds in it. Louisiana's withdrawn, I think, almost $800 million. West Virginia is
doing it. And we need to
get
all states to withdraw from these psychopaths, ladies and gentlemen.
Absolutely. Vote with your feet. Starve them out. If you're woke, go broke. I mean, and we the people are responsible for the kind of stuff that happens in our country. And I really hope and pray that places that are woke, and they'll have a chance to go broke or straighten it out. I mean, it's America. They can say, no, we were wrong. Churches can turn around and say, we made a bad decision on this. And we're sorry, and we want to make it right. Whatever, businesses, any institution, any individual.
I'd have tremendous respect if they would.
Holy cow, so would I. Oh, my heavens. I can't hardly even believe that they continue to double down. And so many organizations, they double down with their, when it's really demonstrated. I mean, the CDC, the FDA, the...
Yeah, they admit
presidents
they were all wrong on vaccines and they changed everything, but yet they still double down and make this part of the children's standard vaccines to be received while it's still, quote, what, emergency authorization? Isn't that where we still are?
But that's what they're going to do. They're going to say, oh, because they've approved it onto the child thing, now it's fully authorized. And now states can go out and make it part of the requirement to go to kindergarten. Do you realize what is going to come from this? Do you know
how many
children?
The only good news is maybe enough parents won't put their kids in kindergarten anymore. That's the only good news.
Or any kind of school. Get them out of the cesspool. Get them out of the toxic waste dump. I mean, bring them home. Fulfill your divine role, people. Raise those children God gifted to you. They're a priceless gift from God. Quit sending
Roger
them
that.
Off to the
Amen.
Holy cow.
Yeah, bring it. Dr. Bradley for president, that's all I'm saying. Thanks for being alongside for the ride, ladies and gentlemen. Hard-hitting talk always at your fingertips. It will be archived at libertyroundtable.com and lovingliberty.net. Spread the word. Donate liberally. Every penny will help us grow our ability to tell the tale worldwide. Thanks for all that you do. Understand that you can check out the weekly webinars from Dr. Scott Bradley. They're video, they're Q&A, they're interactive, they're incredible, and they're all available at freedomsrisingsun.com. Look for Freedom's Call to learn more and learn about his collegiate series to preserve the nation. For Dr. Scott Bradley and Sam Bushman, we declare this nation shall endure. We follow the Prince of Peace. God save the Republic of the United States of America.